To say it's hard to get accurate information about North Korea is a bit of an understatement. Long isolated, close to outsiders, and considered an enemy by its neighbours, much of what is known is incomplete and second-hand. This is Asia Rising, a podcast from La Trobe Asia at La Trobe University, and my guest today is Dr. Chu Ping-Hu, Senior Fellow at the East Asia and International Relations Caucus in Malaysia. She has been researching the economy of North Korea, a job that is part academia and part detective work.
North Korean economy has changed a lot since it was established as DPRK. So initially, they are supposed to be based on the socialist system, and the leader would dictate how the economy is run. So they have a so-called royal court economy in which everything is state-run. So there is no capitalism, you can't do your own business. So ever since in the mid-90s, they suffered from famine and also some natural disasters like flood. That destroyed a lot of the systems, like the food distribution system. So no more ration. Everyone can get food that is handed out by the government. They have to fend for themselves. And that created what is known as the jangmadang economy, in which normal people, they try to look for what they can sell or in exchange for, from butter trade to anything that is coming from China, from South Korea. Those items can be currency in themselves. And the state can no longer control how the economy is run, and thereby informally recognizing that's part of the North Korean economic systems.
Okay, all right. So it's going on, so we might as well own it. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay. And why is it so difficult for us to get an accurate picture on how the economy is going?
So tourism or visiting to the country is difficult. You need to enter by tour group. So you need to sign up for a package that is authorized by the DPRK. So without that, we can't have easy access to the country. Aside from tourism, other ways to get into the country is through NGO, aid works. So how we manage to paint a picture of North Korean economy is by various multiple accounts from different people working inside North Korea, whether they are delivering aid, helping them to set up agriculture system, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, okay. So what numbers can you give me, no matter how vague they are?
What kind of numbers?
It's GDP, how wealthy the country is.
Right. So unfortunately, I really can't draw any numbers right now.
Yeah.
But what we know is that after COVID-19, basically almost zero trade. So they also cut off delivery of goods coming in from China. That also shows how North Korea can actually survive despite the harshest of the sanctions and also cessation of trade.
So there isn't much trade going on with North Korea, and most of what is happening is controlled by sanctions. So tell me about these sanctions. Who's imposing them and how restrictive are they?
So the most well-known are the United Nations Security Council resolutions. So Resolution 1718 is what established the Sanctions Committee on DPRK. That was in 2006. And since then, there are many more regulations, such as autonomous sanctions regulations and luxury goods instruments. So all in all, these are multilateral. So all United Nations member states are expected to comply with these sanctions.
Right.
And there were also unilateral sanctions coming from the United States, South Korea, Japan, and Australia do have some national legislation being drafted just to specifically dealing with DPRK. For example, you can't provide service to North Korean vessels, its aircraft, and the likes.
Okay, so it's really restrictive language. So how does North Korea get around this? How do they sustain themselves while dealing with what these sanctions do?
Yeah, I think it's very impressive of how they bypass the sanctions. Initially, they rely on the normal international financial network. They do open bank accounts all over the world. So after they are being hit by U.S. unilateral sanctions, it was known as the Banco Delta Asia. So a bank in Macau that is heavily sanctioned. And even though it is a unilateral sanctions, countries around the world depends on U.S. banking systems. Most of them comply. So for example, a Malaysian bank handed over accounts held by North Korean citizens over to the U.S. Treasury. So effectively, we handed over the financial resources that North Korea have in our country to the United States, cooperating with the sanctions regime. And that actually pushed Kim Jong-il to the brink of collapse, actually. So he actually pleaded to Jiang Zemin at the time, the Chinese president, that China should help North Korea to survive, or maybe trying to persuade the United States to remove the financial sanctions. So that proved that how connected North Korea is to the international financial system. And since then, they have been able to diversify and creating secondary and now tertiary financial network.
Is it something that is very reliant on interaction with China? I feel that a lot of their activity, a lot of the economy from North Korea is being propped up by China, both through legitimate means, but also illegal trade means.
Well, illegally, it means that the current North Korean bank account holders outside of North Korea and China are held by the local citizens. So for example, if you open a Bank of China account in Malaysia, it might be a Malaysian citizen.
Oh, so it's in somebody else's name?
Yeah, that's right. It's difficult to trace it back to North Korea unless... So this is what the U.S. Department of Treasury has been doing.
Yeah.
They are tracing transactions that eventually would bring them all the way to China, especially in Dandong or northeastern China area, where most of the transaction would then be carried out to be sent to North Korea.
Are there people that are just making a living off opening and managing bank accounts for North Koreans then?
Absolutely.
Wow.
So just a few years ago, there was a massive operation where North Korean engaged with Indian mafia group. So they targeted several cities in India in which Indian citizens, because they get some bucks out of this. So what they did is they carry out the ATM card. So what they need to do is just to keep withdrawing cash out of the ATM machines using the card that is fake. But they are able to bypass that because of the cyber trooper has already installed something to cheat the bank into thinking that this is a legitimate card.
Wow.
So only when you overdrawn it, then the bank would put a stop to it, but it's already too late.
Yeah.
And people would just run away with the cash, hand it over to the local mafia gang, and the local mafia gang will be in touch with North Korean agents and... Yeah, it's a massive operation.
It sounds like a very stressful way to prop up an economy.
Absolutely.
Okay. How about on the trade front? What is the trade market like, say, I assume mostly between China and North Korea?
Yes. So you might be surprised by how many countries used to be in the top five or top 10 trade partner of North Korea. So from Southeast Asia, that would be Thailand, Philippines, and even Singapore.
Right.
So Singapore, some of the companies are now under investigation because of the export of luxury goods to North Korea. So since the government are now more aware of those sanctions regulations, so the luxury good instruments was not introduced strictly until 2017. And this is why. So after the introduction of that instrument, right now, more and more countries are more aware not to export, say, Rolex watches, Mercedes cars. And these are actually the way for the North Korean regime right now, Kim Jong-un, to reward his loyal officials so that they continue to support his leadership.
So the majority of the North Korean economy is dominated by state-owned enterprises. Can you tell me about those? How do they control and how does this restrict development?
Yeah, so for example, there is a North Korean Import-Export Corporation. There is also North Korea Chemical Trading Corporation. So these companies would try to get a particular materials with different countries' sources. So during the Cold War, North Korea actually expanded their diplomatic network quite massively. At some point, they actually have much more diplomatic relations with UN member states than South Korea.
Yeah, okay.
So with those countries, they signed trade agreement. So Malaysia-North Korea trade agreement was signed in 1979, if not mistaken. So the trade items include machinery export, fertilizers, machine tools, and whatnot. So for Malaysia, they expect us to export rubber, tin, and such materials to North Korea. Those legal items to be traded So some of the specific North Korean state-owned enterprises would procure specific types of items, and that is where the illicit component would be included as part of the trade. So I'm sure many people know about the assassination of Kim Jong-nam in Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah, yeah.
So the alleged nerve agent that is used to assassinate him is actually brought into the North Korean Chemical Trading Corporation.
Okay, so it's all part of it. Okay. That's right. Tell me about the effect that this has on North Korea then. How chronic are the economic issues in North Korea? And what does it do to affect the country in ways of food shortages and inequality and the infrastructure development, those sort of things?
Sure. So I think it all has to go back to the Great Famine that they experienced in mid-1990s. To rebuild the economy back then was not easy. Mm. So what Kim Jong-il did is to allow for the first time the entry of international organizations like World Health Organization, Food and Agriculture Organization. So they are allowed to enter the country and monitor the distribution of the public health equipment and also food distribution. So in areas where they try to deliver aid and goods to the people, those North Korean seen foreigners for the first time.
Yeah.
The impact from that is that North Korea become more open to international aid. So that actually helped prop up the country. And for humanitarian reason, many countries supported the initiative. And afterwards, when Kim Jong-il continued to weaponize the nuclear program that they had because of the Bush administration's axis of evil speech, which Kim Jong-il alleged this is the reason why North Korea have the bomb today. So in a way, Kim Jong-un transformed that kind of aid-based economic system. So you rely on international aid to help your population to get by.
But
wow. Yeah. So what Kim Jong-un have in mind, so when he introduced the Beijing policy, is to, at one point, on the other hand, they have to complete the nuclear weapons program. On the other, to achieve economic development, very ambitious. So what they did achieve is the completion of nuclear weapons program, but not the economic front.
Yeah.
So Southeast Asia become very important because we are sympathetic to North Korea and its society, and we think there is nothing wrong with helping out, you know, poor nation, poor people. North Korea actually take advantage of that scenario. And some companies were involved in special economic zone activities. So right now, most of it is just Chinese and Russian companies. There used to be telecommunication company from Egypt, from Thailand, from Vietnam. But then those investments are going nowhere. So they get no return from investing in North Korea.
Yeah, okay. But so it's really come down to aid, to propping up the country and the people.
Yeah, that's...
And making sure it doesn't fall into famine again. So it's like factored into the budget
exactly.
Almost, is it?
So that especially was the case since late 90s to 2010s.
Mm. And how has the economy changed, say, between Kim Jong-il and Kim Jong-un? Is there different leadership styles and focuses? I mean, I know there's still a focus on the military. We'll get to that and the nuclear development. I want to get to that separately. Mm. But just broadly speaking, is there a difference in how they focus on the economy and how it's changed?
Yes. So for Kim Jong-il, aside from relying on the aid, he also trying to rebuild relationship with China and Russia because they are considered as abandoning North Korea at the turn of the century, post-Cold War era. So I think there is some guilt-tripping works. So Russia in the 2000s started to sign some MOUs in industrial cooperation. They also tried to transfer some of the technologies in industrialization. But for China, there is a lot of education opportunities, and this is how the engineers and scientists are trained. So both China and Russia refused to transfer the nuclear weapons technology. So North Korea bypassed that by working with Pakistan, for example.
Yeah.
So the exchange of their ballistic missile technology with the nuclear weapons blueprint. So for Kim Jong-un, he wants his people to be more entrepreneurial.
Right.
So they actually accept investment including from European countries and European entrepreneurial network. So imagine North Korean people attending World Economic Forum, for example, in Davos, right, in Geneva. So that's how North Korean established their overseas networks.
This is coming down to, is the term the money makers? Mm-hmm. Is that the North Korean term for the people who are starting to get a bit of cash flow injection into their lives?
So these privileged citizens, so they are allowed to pursue higher education, getting work permits, working overseas, not as hard laborers, but as white-collar workers. Mm. So with that, they are authorized by the regime to conduct certain businesses, establishing networks, bringing in investment from overseas to North Korea and such.
It must be hard to juggle the fact that you can't have open trade with North Korea, but the people of North Korea must have some desire, say, for Western goods, for nice sneakers and jewelry, and they can't be totally ignorant to, say, makeup products and those kind of things. Is there a lot of desire for more engagement than what there is? Do you get a sense of that?
So I think there is a term called Jangmadang generation.
Yeah.
So of which after the famine, their parents struggle to get by but survive. So their children growing up hungry. So when the economy started to get better since late 2000s, for example, and the cross-border trade between China and North Korea was rampant, and there is no way for North Korean autonomy to regulate that. So this is when the Jangmadang generation children, they grow up watching Chinese TV drama, South Korean TV drama, and they knew of McDonald's, nice cars, nice apartment, condominium. It actually encouraged quite a number of them to defect from the country to seek for a better life.
Right.
So the defection routes, one is you make a living in China or you make it all the way to Southeast Asia where the local embassy or local government would send them directly to Seoul.
All right, that seems a bit extreme, but I'm sure that enough people are doing it as well. Finally, let's talk about nuclear weapons. You've mentioned a bit how there's a focus on that and how they get around the sanctions to get that sort of technology, but how dominant is it? How big of a part of the North Korean economy is it?
So because they are so constrained by so many international laws and sanctions regimes, so they actually find a way to procure dual-use equipment.
Yeah.
So something as innocent as X-ray machine. So
if you
take it apart, so some parts can be used in the nuclear weapons program design. So counter North Korea's nuclear proliferation involving knowledge on dual-use technologies. The many sanctions resolutions that was being introduced, for example, aside from 1718, 1874, 2087, and so on and so forth, is to designate more and more items that is found to be useful in developing indigenous nuclear weapons program.
Yeah.
So imagine by importing or procuring those parts, allowing you to run the weapons program or weaponizing your nuclear energy. Their scientists are heavily awarded. So you see that Kim Jong-un actually giving military titles to civilian scientists. So this is still ongoing until today. So Academy of Military Sciences is now known as Kim Jong-un Academy of Military Development.
It's got a special title.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, okay. Part of me thinks that's very much a shame because it's coming at the cost of denying North Korea those X-ray machines, for example, which I'm sure could be useful for X-ray machines.
Yes.
Although it sounds like they never get to be used in the medical situation. It's straight away stripped for parts and goes into the nuclear kind of factories.
Yeah, there is such suspicion, and that's why medical equipment is part of the sanctioned items.
Yeah.
So humanitarian NGO group has been trying to persuade UNSC Sanctions Committee and also the United States that some exception must be made to provide meaningful humanitarian assistance to North Korean people and not the North Korean regime.
Yeah, okay. Have you gone to North Korea?
No.
Okay. Did you want to go to North Korea? I can't facilitate that. Would you like to go to North Korea?
Well, the first time I got invited to go was actually right after the Kim Jong-nam assassination. So I was advised by my government not to go.
Yeah, maybe don't go then. How difficult is it to do your research then to learn about the North Korean economy and to get a good sense of what is going on?
Yeah, I think when people talk about North Korea, all they think about are those missiles, nuclear weapons, tests. So it's very important for us to also realize there are North Korean people who are trying to live, to survive as well. What we can do best is to understand their economic conditions. And this is why humanitarian and human rights NGOs are crucial for us to understand what's really going on the ground. So before COVID, there are some attempts at trying to rationalizing continued engagement with North Korea, for example, because young generation is the future of the country. So if they can think differently, they may bring change. So for example, the idea of accepting entrepreneurship, when Kim Jong-un started to accept that, they introduced a term called socialist entrepreneurialism. It's all scrapped now. It's banned by the constitution because after COVID, Kim Jong-un realized, we can actually get by without engagement with the international community. So we need to change their mind about this, actually.
That is Dr. Chuping Hu, Senior Fellow at the East Asia and International Relations Caucus in Malaysia. And you've been listening to Asia Rising. If you like this podcast, please subscribe to it, send a link to your friends, or leave a review. You can follow La Trobe Asia on LinkedIn or what is left of Twitter. We are at La Trobe Asia and Chuping Hu is at WhoCP. Asia Rising is a podcast from La Trobe Asia, produced at La Trobe University in Melbourne, Australia, on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. I'm Matt Smith, and thanks for listening.